Brooklyn.
Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to the Sunday show on Here Be Monsters. I want to wish a good time this evening out for Jack Jodell. With me this evening covering for Jack is Wayne Johnson from his blog is called The Engineer of Knowledge, right, Wayne?
That is very good. Correct, yes.
And I'm looking for our wonderful lead-in song for this show, and I'll get to it. And then, boy, we certainly have a row of songs here. And we're going to open up with something to celebrate the day. Anthem of the day, huh?
Man, that was you. I was right there with you, girl.
You know, as I was telling you before we went on air, nobody ever believes you on one side of the sheets or the other if you say you're bisexual. So I just basically call myself queer. But you know, the real family that I have always belonged to is the I'm in trouble family. So. that one. You know, I'm always in trouble, man.
Good for you.
And we have Toothless in Tulsa with us today. Good to see you, fella.
Yes, absolutely.
David, I'm feeling better. Go away.
I was going to say, I have one thing I'd like to interject to start this program off today was the other night, last night, I just became aware of, if you're familiar with Leonard Cohen, he's an artist, a musician, a singer, and he sings a song called Anthem, and I recommend everybody to kind of Google it, just like the national anthem. But the refrain of the song is, "Ring the bells that still can ring, forget your perfect offering, there is a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. And that light is the light of illumination, enlightenment." And that's what the Supreme Court just ruled on here this week.
I agree with you. That's very well said. You know, I tuned into, what's it called with that idiot, David Gregory, Meet the Press. And Rachel was sitting in, and she sat there and held her own today with Jim DeMint and the other Kansas City or Kansas AH. Telling them, you know, and just as the Democratic congressman was too, that basically their argument is the same discrimination, the same subhuman kind of bigotry that went on prior to the passage of civil rights, what has been going on and is going on now. And you know what, too? We should remember today, too, that not only did they knock it down at the Supreme Court, but the Supreme Court has also refused to step in to stop marriages from taking place. And right now, as if so many hours, I was seeing where there have been thousands of marriages performed in the state of California.
Yeah, I saw that today, too, and in reference to Rachel Maddow. She is so well-spoken. She is so well-spoken, and she is so equipped on logical argumentation skills that basically I think she could make the whole current electorate of the GOP today look like they just walked off the set of Hee Haw. She is brilliant, and she makes them look like she just leaves them standing there with mud on their face.
I hear you. She's a very bright lady. She really is. Too bad she's become such a spokesperson for the White House. But she's a bright lady. I got to tell you, though, all those people getting married, so you talk about being in trouble, man. I can't help it.
I was going to say, and as I kind of told you before, I myself have a niece who is engaged to be married to her partner out in Seattle, Washington, this coming August, and I want her to be so happy, and I'm very proud that the state of Washington has the enlightenment to see that it's just another marriage of two people who love each other, making a commitment to each other, and basically that's what marriage is. It's no different than the marriage to my own wife.
Well, you know, it's the truth. And I noticed that they have a lot of stuff playing on all the cable channels and things, and the awareness is up. Huge. And also, it should be said that today we have so much to cover, really. But today, you know, the parade was through downtown Manhattan, and the lady who led the parade, Harry Belafonte was the Grand Marshal, but sharing the honors was Edith Windsor. And this was her case. And I think she's 84 years old. And I think it's just wonderful. I think it's just wonderful that she had such a wonderful, you know, after losing her spouse or her significant other, having to pay the outrageous estate taxes. Hopefully they'll rescind that for her. I mean, it cost her over $300,000. And, you know, this was a lifetime's worth of work, you know, and things and stuff. And it basically canceled out much of what her significant other had left her, her partner, her wife, her, you know. And so today, the parade through Manhattan really had a special poignancy to it.
Great. Well, as also I told you, too, just last week here in Columbus, Ohio, they held a gay pride rally down here recognizing the aspects, coming basically just saying, look, we're here. You know, we're not going to hide in the closets anymore. We are here. And Ohio State is also looking at making things legal and accurate for gay couples here, too, in this state. So
That's a wonderful step forward.
Yes.
And so the ball is rolling. Did you see this week where a woman stood out big and bright in the state of Texas?
Absolutely. Keep going, please.
Her name was Wendy Davis, a state senator who went on and was filibustering for, God, was it over? It was close to 11 hours before the lieutenant governor stepped in and tried to disqualify her. And then it turned out that she filibustered long enough that on the computer it was wrong or something. But what happened was that the filibuster worked. And if you've seen any of the video on this, you'll know that the whole state house was filled with women and sympathetic supporters who were there with her. And when they told her that she was disqualified after 11 something hours of filibustering, the whole house roared. People were.
Yeah.
Were just roaring, and it reminded me of Wisconsin. Do you remember?
Yes, I do. I remember that very well.
And it's hopeful. I found that very hopeful. Whenever a lot of Americans get in the streets, and you know, like today's parades in various metropolises in this country, if we could get that many people into the streets against all of the injustice. And, you know, the same way that they're doing right this very minute again in Tahrir Square. Have you seen that?
Yes, I have.
There are thousands that want him ousted, this president in Egypt. I don't know. What do you think about that one?
Well, that one is, you know, democracy is very ugly, but people voted for change, and they weren't happy with what they got. I think you're going to see more of that in Egypt until they finally get it really settled down. But not only in Egypt, but you're going to see that kind of aspects erupting in Iraq, Afghanistan, you know, everything where we've been, of course, Libya. It just wasn't done overnight. It's going to take some years for it to find its ambient and then settle down to that.
Well, you know, the Arab Spring that was begun in Tahrir Square started something rolling. Actually, I heard somebody remember him this week, but forgot his name and didn't use it. It began with a young man named Mohamed Bouazizi. Do you know who I'm talking about?
Yes, he was the one that started Google. He was like a reporter and got on the internet and tweeting and stuff.
No, he was a man from, I think it was Tunisia, who set himself on fire. Yes.
Yeah, set himself on fire because, yes, as a protest.
Yes, at the injustice. And it started there, and it went quickly into Cairo. And it was a woman Yeah, he had a fruit stand. He set himself on fire. Basically, none of us should ever forget the name of Mohammed Bouazizi. Never. It went into Cairo, and it was a woman, one of the women bloggers in Cairo, and one of the she actually put something up on YouTube to ask her fellow citizens to come into Tahrir Square. And that's what triggered within Egypt. But everybody in social networking began to follow on live coverage by bloggers and video bloggers from Egypt and Cairo started to follow this in social networks. And very little of the public, even the public who's used to watching it all on the MSM, everyone was trained and focused into social networks to see what was going on in Egypt. That was pretty stunning stuff.
I was going to say, that internet has proven and will prove in the future a very powerful tool of getting your word out and the message out, very similar to this blog radio station that we're on right now.
And here's the thing, as David is pointing out from the chat room, we've got our fingers in a lot of pots: Iraq, Afghanistan, Libya, Syria, Yemen, Pakistan, mm-hmm. Somalia, North Africa. We're in a lot of other places too, especially in the Pacific. But the point is that in many streets right now, right this minute, there are people filling the streets in protests all over the globe in major metropolitan areas. In Bulgaria, they're freaking out in the streets. It's incredible. And at the same time that all of this is going on, we have, do you guys hear that background? My neighbors, the kids? No, I hope not.
No.
At the same time that all of this is going on, you have this extraordinary thing going on with, good grief, just lost it all together there. I got sidetracked for a second. At the same time that we've got this going on, we've got Western Europe looking at our administration and our government as WTF moment.
Because
the NSA, all of the NSA documents that Mr. Snowden has poured out and they've been publishing now regular, are showing up that the incredible nature of using the word intelligence, but our NSA and CIA have been bugging regularly as clockwork all of the major allies we have financially and trade-wise and all through Western Europe, all through Eastern Europe. It all has come out in these documents. And today, David posted in Journey with Roundtree 7 over on Facebook an interesting article, and I wonder if you know about this, Wayne. There's a building in New York, and I'm going over to look for it right now for this post so that I can be explicit and correct with what I'm about to say.
Okay.
This could be called the center of the internet. This is one of the only 12 buildings in the world where networks interconnect. In fact, more than 400 networks intersect inside 60 Hudson. That's in New York City. Even transatlantic cables connecting Europe and North America run directly into this building from Wednesday.
Right.
Everything else.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. It's one of the major hubs that, you know, they links out and then spider webs back out again. It's a routing center.
Yeah, it's very convenient for our espionage-minded different branches of that. How many branches of our government are, you know, listening to each other and listening to the governments of without their knowledge and of their private matters? I mean, so this is breaking news abroad. Der Spiegel published this information, and it's gone from the German government, which is you know, German government officials are speaking out publicly, you know, against the United States now, and in Brussels too.
Well, I can say that if this has been going on for a very, very, very long time, even back in the days of Daddy Bush Plus, and now since the Patriot Act was enacted, then it just became spying on everything with steroids. It's really become now really a national embarrassment that we are spying it, and to the level that we're spying. That's, I guess, the egregious thing. It's anything and everything now.
Well, I have to ask you, Wayne, what government on this planet right now can look at our government with this kind of information spilling out and see any kind of integrity, any kind of honesty, any kind of, unless there's a clean sweep of the government we have right now, really, by election or whatever. Policy, it doesn't seem to work. And, right. and one election after another, I mean, to be quite honest, this presidency that we have right now is turning into a real horror show. I mean, from kill lists with drones.
Definitely some embarrassing moments, yes. Definitely some embarrassing moments. But you were asking what other countries. Our own country has a very big problem with China, not only with the industrial espionage, but also tapping into the Pentagon itself.
Yeah.
You know, war plans and weaponry, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm not saying, well, you know, that does not justify, you know, while others are doing it to us, that doesn't justify it. But you were asking, you know, what other nation, and China and is very, very good at doing the same kind of espionage. And if they're doing it to us, they're also doing it to our allies. So I think the whole world needs to wake up and just see how vulnerable we are. Through this internet digital espionage.
Yeah, but you know what? I got to ask you, Wayne, what happened to that brand, you know? The good, honest apple pie, you know, baseball, Chevrolet, USA brand. What has happened to that? I think it's, you know, I think it's pretty well been flushed. As far as it goes with other countries and abroad. And we can see that anyone who's involved in social networking, now I am because I use it to put this show out and to work with the folks over at Roundtree 7 blog. I know you are to a certain extent because you're a blogger.
Right.
Social networking has actually, it is actually at this moment developing, well, you could call it a subculture that exists within all cultures across this planet. And what it embraces is this subculture is made up of the people who are speaking to one another one-on-one instead of listening to corporate messaging through, you know, mouthpieces over television screens or radio. They're talking to one another one-on-one. I got friends all over this planet right now because of social networking, and I can talk to them face to face in real time, and I do it. And we all agree. I mean, I have a friend in Pakistan, and she and I mean, she, you know, she lost a friend to a drone, and that very same day on Skype with me is, you know, Gwen, it's not you. You and I know each other. We're friends. We care for one another. We value each other's lives. But our leaders don't. our governments don't. All they value coins. And this is what social networking is making happen. People getting in touch with one another. And, you know, it's funny because I've noticed, I don't know if you have, but I have, but the zealots and the fanatics and, you know, and terrorists, if you will, they don't make the same kind of use of social networks. They just kind of drive by and sort of, you know, try to post things and stir a stick, but they aren't involved in the subculture of it themselves, you know?
I agree. There is a blog I like visiting that's out of the Florida area. The gentleman, the blog site is called The Progressive Professor. Mm-hmm. He's a very good man, very well educated. He called this last presidential election of who the you know, President Obama was going to, what states he was going to win, and who you know, were going to win the other states, and he called it to the T. Very good at predicting the elections, and I recommend everybody to go to the Progressive Professor's site. But he too had someone from California, you know, one of those trolls under the bridge that came out to eat the billy goat kind of stuff, would make up nihilistic facts just to support his argument. And when you pointed out to him that what he was stating to support his arguments wasn't even remotely accurate, then he got very verbally violent and, you know, with all kinds of nasty names and, you know, you're stupid, yada, yada, yada. But until, I look at it this way. He exposed himself. Everybody knew he was nothing more than a troll. And basically became very much of a joke.
Well, you know, we recognize that. It's like a few of us in the social networks will say, you have to feel the truth out. And, you know, it's pretty easy to feel a troll coming. There's several characteristics, especially on Tumblr or Twitter or Facebook. You can, if you pay attention, you can feel them out. It used to be that, because I use a lot of it for business, many people, I mean, I have a couple thousand friends on Facebook, but I had to learn that you shouldn't just indiscriminately allow people to become your friend. You have to go and check people out, because they can be, you know, it's not that they're dangerous, it's that they can usurp your message and as you say, come out and put some bullshit on your page and turn everything upside down and take it completely off message. Yeah, that's for sure. That happens.
Absolutely, right. And that was, I don't care what the topic that was posted that we were going to be discussing, it was all of a sudden taken over, and you know, and even a non-tangible subject, and, you know, be a big long rant on it. I'll say that the professor was very tolerant with him, and, you know, was countering him, and, you know, pointing out where he was wrong. He is a mentor, so that's what he was doing, until finally the obnoxiousness just got too much, and I think, you know, basically we just said, look, I'm not going to keep you from posting something on here, but I'm not going to give you the validity of even bothering answering you.
Oh, well, basically.
It was so nihilistic and narcissistic, too.
Well, basically, but my point was that, you know, most real, true, active terrorists, I think, the only thing they do, I don't think they go for, you know, that kind of small trolling. What it is that's about a fanatic or a people who hate, the haters, you know. There's a lot them out there. There's a whole lot of them out there. But there's so much more good stuff going on. I see so much more positive in the especially in the social networks. I noticed that just as a and you get to know people's personalities pretty well too. especially, and folks think you're nuts if you say through Twitter you get to know, but especially the celebrities, it's like, we lost the Sopranos actor, Gandolfini.
Yes, yes.
And one of his friends was Alec Baldwin, who is a very politically savvy and a poster on Twitter. You know, he's very adroit at posting his opinion in 143 or 140 characters or less. And smart fellow, really. And I agree with a lot of what he has to say, but I, you know, it doesn't matter either way. What happened was some New York City writer had posted that his new wife was tweeting while the funeral was going on. And
right.
Baldwin did not take well to that, and he went after him on these Twitter wars. Do you know about those? Have you seen that stuff?
I myself don't personally Twitter. My oldest daughter's trying to get me on Facebook, I think it is. No, not Facebook. Maybe it is Twitter. And but I haven't done it yet. But yes, I am familiar with what you're talking about with Alex Baldwin, where he basically, it was almost like the TMZ where they just made up something about his wife just so it could go tabloid type publication.
Yeah, right. Well, I tweeted.
He reacted back to that.
Yeah, I tweeted back out that, you know, you don't tug on Superman's cape and you don't sit in the wind and you don't tweet about Baldwin.
Yeah.
You just don't do it. It is pretty funny. We have a caller coming in, and I'm hoping it's my pal and our host on the show on Here Be Monsters once a month, Woman Spirit Rising. Is that you, Flash?
That's me.
There you are. Happy Pride Day.
Thank you.
And this is my co-host is not Jack today. It's Wayne Johnson. Wayne, this is Flash.
Flash?
Hi there.
Yeah.
Hey, Wayne.
I'm
getting
my... Yes, go ahead.
I'm just getting my headset put in.
Oh, okay. Yes, it's a pleasure to be speaking with you.
Yeah, this will be interesting, I'm sure.
When I had posted a couple of things on my Facebook page, Flash posted about her first gay pride or one of her first gay pride marches a long time ago in New York, and I invited her to come in and remember with us.
Oh, yeah. It was a quite memorable experience. Back when the movement was quite a bit younger.
Mm-hmm. And when was this?
Excuse me?
About when was this?
72 and 73.
Well, that's a while back, yeah.
Yes.
Not that bad, but
yeah.
That was about the same time as the riots with, was it the Stonewall Inn? Stonewall
Nightclub?
Well, that
was the beginning. That was the beginning, and that was a few years earlier.
Right.
Pride started to commemorate the Stonewall riots.
There you go.
Yeah.
And so up north, and everywhere really in the country, it's been typically on this weekend, you know, around the 27th, to commemorate that day.
Right.
But in places in Florida, because it's so hot, sometimes, like in Gainesville, we have Pride in October or the end of September.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we can be proud all the time. But but the legitimate commemoration is this weekend in July. I mean, June.
Yeah.
I've been writing Astroflash for a couple of days, which forces me to be involved with July when I'm really in June. But the particular story, the 72 Pride celebration was very, you know, pretty small, relatively, for New York. Nothing's small in New York. But
right. My
band was the only band playing in 72. And there were speakers and probably had a couple of maybe guitar players or something. But that was it. It was pretty small. By 73, the mafia had taken over. And in other words, all the bars. All the bars, and it was such a different scene. In 72, it was one little stage in Washington Square that was like already built in there. It was nothing brought in. And someone had a sound system, and we did what we could do on this little stage.
Right.
73, whole other story. There was a humongous stage right in front of those arches there.
Yep.
And
yep.
I think from off the ground, I think the stage was probably about 8 feet or something, and with a humongous sound system. Fortunately, I knew the sound guy from the year before, and he was very, very sweet, because what was about to happen there was not very sweet at all. At that point, the men in the gay movement had some of the same problems as some of the straight men did. In other words, women were relegated to a second-class status. And, you know, even though there were women very adept at leadership, they got shoved to the back and had to make coffee and flyers and, you know, how it was back then. Hopefully it's not anymore. And so there was that particular struggle that was pretty typical. And so a lot of the women by that point didn't really want to be that involved. But this was the summer of my kamikaze concerts. And that meant I went to play where I wasn't terribly wanted by the organizers. I was wanted by the people in the street who came to hear good music from a lesbian feminist. But the groups that would organize were not always so kind, as was the case in 73. And so they had us come in. They said, we need you to be here 3 hours early so that we can have our organization smooth. I thought that was a bit much, but, you know, I was very willing to play by the rules, whatever they were. So we did what we were going to do. We were only going to play two songs apiece. And I would be playing my two, and I was going to play lead guitar for this other group of women who were also going to play right after me. So we were pretty settled. We knew what we had to do. And we're waiting, and we're watching, sitting in this fancy apartment off the park with a closed-circuit TV and all kinds of fancy things that we'd never seen at a show before. You know, I was pretty used to doing movement gatherings, and this was way high-tech for those years. I mean, people had walkie-talkies, and people just set up at different parts of the trip from the apartment to the stage. And I started to get an understanding that we were being kept in that apartment incommunicado from our groups because they had no intention of us being on stage by 3 o'clock, as was the agreement. You know, I kept asking him, before he left for the stage. Oh, and this was Vito Russo was handling this. And you may have heard of him. He was the guy who put together the book, and I think it was a film after called The Celluloid Closet, which was very good. And I remained pissed off at this man for years because of this event until I saw a special, I think it was on HBO, about his life. And so I can't in good conscience spew venom about him across the board because he did some very good things. But not this day, he did not. And
that's a large change from today's Pride. It was huge down through down through downtown. And Harry Belafonte was one of the commercials. And the other, of course, was Edith Winslow, isn't it? Yeah, I think that's
That's fabulous.
And that was just one of our folks went down and attended and said it was wonderful, just a wonderful, hot, wonderful parade.
Hot it is.
Let me pose this question to you. It was in either 73 or 74, the New York Dolls came down and performed, you know, out on one of the loading piers around there in Baltimore. And from there is where I got the exposure. Was the New York Dolls involved in these concerts in New York at that time?
Well, the Dolls at that point were pretty a local phenomena, really. I actually met them at Bob Gruen's apartment in West Beth in New York because we were putting out flyers for one of our concerts. And David was at the front door quite toasted. And he said, come on in here. Come on, we're having a party. And I said, we really got to work. Oh, come on, just have a drink. And, you know, we had a good work ethic then and we needed to go. But the Dolls were pretty crazy. I don't remember them doing Pride. Okay. I know they didn't do Pride in 73. And you said they were doing Pride in Baltimore, so they weren't doing it in New York. But in New York, at that point, there were at least 40,000 people at the gathering.
Yeah.
And it started to thin because there were no women on the stage who weren't associated with men's groups. And that's why we had to make sure we were there to represent lesbians that were just not wanting to be joined up because the situation was so bad for us with the men. So there we were, waiting our turn patiently. And I told my friends, Kim and Kay, I said, you know what? I'm not sure why they're going to do this, but they're going to try and keep us locked up here till there's no more time to play. And they said, really? I said, yeah. I have, you know, I'm a psychic. I get these feelings. And I had to be, I was dead right. I said, what we're going to do when Bette Midler gets ready to leave, we're going to just go down like we're part of the group, and we're going to grab the car behind her. Because they had a Lincoln there for her, and they had another car behind it. So when Bette left, she was wonderful. And at that point, she was being accompanied by Barry Manilow, if you can believe that.
Oh, yes, definitely.
That was her old accompanist at the time.
Yeah.
I was going to say, in the days of the Divine Miss M.
Right.
Yeah.
And, of course, she was playing at the Gay Baths.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. So, yes, that's right. That's right. That's where she really got her start and her fame was in the Gay Baths in New York.
That was their place. So, so she left, and we went right behind her and jumped in the car right behind her. And we start tootling down the road right behind Bette's Lincoln. And I said, all right, this is going to go pretty well. At which point, one of the guys who was supposed to be regulating traffic was right at that corner, and he looked in and he says, wait a minute, they're not supposed to be going anywhere. And I said, okay, your game is foiled. And the driver says, but wait, I want to see Bette. And I looked out the window and I said, he wants to see Bette. So I just said, okay, take us to the stage, James. And he did, and we got out, and Vito just about died when he saw me. And I didn't have any relationship with him before, you know, plus or minus. I didn't know who he was or what could happen or not. But I knew I'd better get myself to the stage if I had any idea about playing at all. So we get there, and he screams at me about, can you better take yourself back? because there's no room for you on the stage right now. And they had just had this really terrible boy band that couldn't carry a tune in a bucket on for half hour. And I said to him, I said, Vito, I told you this was the time we needed to play. You told me it would be fine. Obviously it's not. He said, we don't have time for you now. I said, and you had time for that sorry band? That was horrible. And pretty much anybody would have agreed to that. The event started off with, I don't remember her name, but a drag queen had jumped up on the stage because apparently things weren't right for them either. So this was not gay pride, fun for everybody, standing strong, arm in arm together. This was just not one of those events. And so we get to the stage, and he's cursing at me and telling me that I'd better go, and I told him there was no way that would happen. So after kind of bitching at each other for a while, he said, all right, well, you can do one song. And I said, well, you know, it's pretty pathetic that I've waited here 3 hours to play two songs. But that was the agreement, and I'm going to go with the agreement. And then he just says, well, if you dare to play more than one song, I'll turn off the microphone on you. And I said, Vito, that's a really bad idea. Number one, there's a lot of angry women out there who've been waiting all day for some representation. They won't like it. I will personally kick your ass, and they'll tear up your nice stage. So I don't suggest it. And the sound guy, who was my friend from the year before, was smiling at me. We were kind of giggling. I know he's not going to turn me off. So Vito brings me over to the center of the stage. And at this point, you know, there's like 30,000 plus, because a lot of women had already left. And he says, Flash Silver Man. And I grabbed the mic out of his hand. And I said, Moon, you asshole. And, you know, I was at this point, I was not going for popularity. I was gonna make my point. And so then a whole group of gay men in the front start cursing at me. And I said, listen, you know, I have been bullied by straight men for a long time. And if you think this skinny little dude is going to push me off, you're crazy. More swear words leveled at me. I didn't care. But at that point, I was so angry, it's a wonder my hands even were able to play. But
What songs did you play?
Oh, well, they were all my own songs. I can't even remember what they were.
Of them, I'm interested.
Excuse me?
I said, what were the titles? I'm still interested.
Yeah, I don't remember. I honestly don't. I think I did one called The Sea Is She and maybe Lunar Lullaby. I was, you know, pretty cosmic even in those days. I think that's what I did, but I could have done one that was more political, too.
Okay.
So I did two songs.
Okay, good for you.
And my friends that I played lead guitar for, I played two songs with them. So we did what we were going to do. But what he had in mind for us, I think by 6 o'clock, they lost their sound permit. And they knew that. So the plan was put the women on when no one would hear them.
Right.
Oh, jeez.
So that was Flash Silver Moon, How to Win Friends and Influence People concert.
Well, okay. Allow me to ask this question. What was the name of your group?
We didn't have a name. The two women were sisters, and they just called themselves Kim and Kay at the time.
Oh.
And I was playing solo. So I played with them, and I played by myself.
Oh, okay. All right. Very good.
But I've been playing music for a very long time.
Yeah, well, I was playing in rock bands about that same time period, but nothing in the venues at the level that you. I was just doing nightclubs and that kind of thing.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Where did you live?
I was Mid-Atlantic area. Washington, D.C., Baltimore, the Delmarva Peninsula, in that area.
Yeah, I played a lot in the Jersey Shore.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you ever work with or work around or hear of Roe Maggio?
Is that a woman?
Yeah, Roe Maggio, or Rosemary Mastrangelo.
I don't know. That name's a little familiar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Was she out on Long Island, maybe?
No, she was in New York. In 75, she and I shared an apartment on West 15th Street. She was a musician. I was going to school, actually, for summer, but I extended my stay. She started playing a lot of backup for groups. She was one of the cleanest leads I ever ran into. She was a good friend. Still is. She still plays backup out in California. Married Freddie. You might know him, Freddie. I can never remember his last name. He was soundboard for the New Riders and also for Jefferson Starship. Well, Airplane, but Starship.
Yeah. Yeah, I store the Starship and the Airplane a lot.
They did the Red Octopus tour.
Uh-huh, neat.
Getting married. I actually was a roadie on that crew.
Cool.
I think that
was like one of their number one hits on that, Miracles.
Right.
On that one.
Yes. If only you believe.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Everybody was still getting pretty toasted in those days, too.
Yes.
I mean, these folks would roll into, you know, the hotel and the mirror would come down off the wall.
Uh-huh.
I was a puppy. I was a puppy. But, I'd be surprised if you didn't know each other. Here we are yakking about nothing. So that was what it was back in the day. And in the beginnings, that's incredible that you were back, that you have that kind of history. Have you ever written about it?
I actually have. There was a book published, something about women who changed the world in the United States during the early 70s.
Uh-huh.
That wasn't the exact title, but that was close enough to it. So I had some bit of this written in there, but I do believe I'm going to have my own book covering these type things called Flashbacks.
That's
a title.
seems like a good one.
Yeah, definitely.
Because in a lot of ways, I've been at really key places in our history from, you know, the early 60s on, pretty much.
Yeah, kind of like the Forrest Gump of Lady Rock.
could say that.
There you go.
I used to play in Asbury Park in this place called the Upstage Club. And
yeah.
It was a musician's club. And that's where I wound up jamming some with Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah, I was going to say, as soon as you said Asbury Park, that's what popped into my head.
And that was the coolest place to play music. They had a stage upstairs and downstairs. They didn't have alcohol, but people didn't need any there. You always had a band upstairs and a band downstairs. When upstairs stopped playing, then a jam ensued on that stage. And the downstairs booked band would start playing. So you always had a jam and a booked band.
That was a BYOB kind of style of Amaretto in a Coke bottle, I remember. I hate Amaretto to this day.
I tell you what, that was my first 9-to-5 job.
Wow.
First and last. I played, 9 till 5 in the morning.
Yeah.
Half hour on, half hour off.
Yeah. I'll tell you, when you said Amaretto and Coke, I'm like, oh, how long has it been since I've heard that combination?
I used to have a shot of it.
Uh-huh.
Just to keep my voice smooth, I'd keep it and I'd sip on it every now and again.
Yeah. Uh-huh. We are at the end of the evening, folks. I really appreciate you coming on board and giving us your recollections. It was a blast. Really liked hearing your histories.
Good. It was a very fun event. Pissed as hell, but loved it.
Wayne, thank you so much for stepping in for Jack. I appreciate it and enjoy having you.
Well, like I said, the pleasure was mine. I really enjoyed it, and you can ask me back at any time. Today was really a very special show, and it was very enlightening, and I loved it.
I will be asking you back. You can count on it. Also got another project I'll email you about. I want to remind everybody to send some good energy into the direction of Egypt and into Cairo and all the major cities there, because people are standing in the streets and they need that energetic support, positive good stuff coming from us.
Absolutely.
So please do. And I want to remind everybody that this show, the Sunday show, is sponsored by Roundtree7.com. And, please go on over to the Engineer of Knowledge, that blog too. Check out Wayne's blog. And also the Commons Project Network, TCPN. And be sure to check out Flash at flashsilvermoon.com. And that's it, folks. That's what we've got for you today, because I'm going to play us off with a little bit of something smooth and cool. And that would be it.
Well, thank you, and good night.
Thanks. Good night, everybody.
Thank you, everybody.
Listening for him. his call.
Here I come to save the day.
That means that Mighty Mouse is on the way.
Hey, don't forget, you got to have heroes. That's it for the Sunday show.
It's 7 o'clock.